The Hardening of Gentle Hearts, Part 4. With good friends and soul comrades reveling in idealistic youth. I left off Part 3 with a cryptic reference to a certain time proven allegory. It's the best way, it seems, to try and explain something very intangible, ephemeral, like a strange mist we see only in retrospect. A quiet, haunting melody that drifts in on a quiet, sleepless night from far, far away. Familiar, yet strange, reminding us of something we wish, perhaps, to forget. I would tell it quietly to my young, earnest, fascist friend. And lest I came across as somehow a pompous, grandly moralizing fool, I might hint at it being less of a wise counsel delivered from on high, more perhaps a humble confession. You see, we were young in those days, full of beans, vim and vigour. We strode tall over the high mountains of soaring idealism, under the clear blue sky, the sun warming and inspiring our hearts and illuminating our dreams. We were well aware of the dark, cloud-covered valley below, hiding the grimy towns. It was the topic of our earnest conversation. We knew there was rampant injustice down there, discrimination in many forms. We knew the voting system was rigged in unspeakable fashion, or we called it gerrymandering. We knew there was discrimination in public housing, in employment, and that the justice system was hopelessly biased. The Royal Ulster Constabulary treated us harshly, and we were presumed guilty and required to prove our innocence. We might be beaten, for no good reason, by volunteer thugs in police uniform, armed with pickaxe handles, and from our lofty mountain peaks of presumed moral perfection, we could hear the screams of our folk drifting up piteously from the valley floor. I would remember my mother's many sad stories. And we young men decided for the best of reasons to intervene in whatever fashion deemed necessary. Ah, yes, I sigh softly. You see, the years have rolled by, decades have switched out, and I tell you, we meant well. But years, decades later, do we have the courage to ask the hard question? Namely, did something invisible, a cruel hand perhaps, reach up out of that dark valley and coldly touch unseen our warm hearts? Did we perchance become that which we once hated so much? My young fascist friend might look blank or even annoyed. His eyes might look at me darkly, in his eyes a hint of suspicion that the old man had gone soft. He might growl at me. So, what does that mean? What's the point of just words? Talk is cheap. There's too much talk. Meanwhile, the raging lion devours. I would nod in agreement. I would remind him of the old soldier's words. In war, you cannot see the individual, only the uniform, otherwise nothing ever gets done. See a creaking of the heavy oak door. I would remind him of Jack Donovan's words in Violence is Golden. I would tell him that any movement that shuns violence as a last resort is doomed for failure. History coldly proves it convincingly. Si vis pacem, para bellum. If you desire peace, prepare for war. But I would tell him that hate is a toxic compound that gnaws away relentlessly at the inside of any receptacle that tries to contain it, and that therefore violence is the absolute last resort of the moral man. That the good fascist, fit and healthy, skilled at fighting and weaponry, should also take great care to be a deeply spiritual man. Hence the many articles in the fascist spirituality section. Lest that terrible rage, that hate, devours him. I would say all this quietly to my young, earnest, fascist friend, and lest I came across as somehow a pompous, grandly moralizing fool, I might hint at it being less of a wise counsel, delivered from on high, more perhaps a humble confession. Alexander Solzhenitsyn spoke these words: "How we burnt in the prison camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every police operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive? If during periods of mass arrests, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and at every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers or whatever was at hand. The organs would very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt." Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Thomas Jefferson said, "I hold it that a little rebellion now and then is a good thing, and as necessary in the political world as storms in the physical." Jack Donovan in Violence of Golden said, "Violence is the gold standard, the reserve that guarantees order. In actuality, it is better than a gold standard, because violence has universal value. Violence transcends the quirks of philosophy, religion, technology, and culture. It's time to quit worrying and learn to love the battle axe. History teaches us that if we don't, someone else will."